Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
The Entertainment Report, sponsored by Walter E. Smith Furniture and Design. I am going to take the next half hour to talk with my good friend Rick Kogan about how your life growing up in Chicago has crafted you to be the writer that you are, that has helped you develop to be the writer that you are. Because on this radio station, hang on one second, I got the wrong mic. Hang on, mic four. Helps when I turn the mic on. Go ahead. You're on.
I'm so glad to be in and help you, David. No, I'm so glad to be in to help you. That's a big question, right?
I know it is. That's why we have a half hour. So I met you standing outside the old Tribune building back in the day. You were smoking a cigarette. It was a beautiful spring, summer day. And I'm like, that's Rick Kogan. I'm going to go up. And I introduce myself. And you've been nothing but gracious to me.
You could have found me out there on really bad winter day smoking, too. You wouldn't have stopped, but you would have found me out there then, too.
So I've been fascinated by your interviewing techniques and style, right? I've been listening to GN for all my life. I moved here when I was seven. My dad had it on in the car all the time. And the two top interviewers, and they're great jocks here, and they're great hosts.
No question.
Forget, and I'm not disparaging any of them, was Milt Rosenberg, when I would drive home at 10:30 at night from working.
Yeah.
And he would have four people in studio, and he would, scholars, and he'd be like, in chapter 13, paragraph 2, line 3, you said this, and I'm just like, and how he weaved all of the guests.
He was good, man.
Amazing.
He was good, especially because Milt would have cocktails at Ricardo's before coming on the air. I always said, that was an inspiration to me. I said, oh my God, you can have a drink before you interview people on the radio? That's my kind of radio.
That's your kind of radio. And that kind of enticed you to get into radio.
Well, part of it is the whole, I mean, there's something to do with the bar culture, the old-fashioned neighborhood tavern culture, where it wasn't just a bunch of people staring at their phones.
No.
It was people having conversations.
That was the watering hole meant the watering hole. You went to get the water and you didn't leave. And it's funny you bring up Ricardo's, because that's who your parents named you. I did some research on you, yeah, buddy. That's who your parents named you after. It's not Richard. It's no. Rick.
But it's not spelled right. There's a great story, David. When I was about, I don't know, third grade at LaSalle School, and Mrs. Corrigan kept calling me Richard at the beginning of the class. And I said, you know, Mrs. Corrigan, that's not my name. My name is Rick. And she goes, no one's name is Rick. That's a nickname. That's what's called a nickname. So I made the horrible mistake of going home that morning for lunch and telling my mother.
Oh, no.
Yeah, you didn't know my mother. One of the great mistakes of my life. And she goes, I'm coming to school with you right now. So she went back that afternoon and gave Mrs. Corrigan a lecture in the fact that I had been named after their great friend. They met at Ricardo's, my parents, in 1948.
Uh-huh.
And a long lecture about how my name was Rick. And so a few years later, David, I realized, now wait a minute, Rick Ricardo's name was spelled R-I-C. And I say to my mother, I say, well, why is my name R-I-C-K? And in typical Mary Lou Kogan fashion, she says, well, we didn't want to be unconventional, so we put a K on there. And I thought, this is the stupidest thing I've ever heard of, but that's the nature.
Not going to say anything about, not going to, yes, Mom, great idea, love you very much.
Oh, I don't know what I said at that time. I think I said, as I said a million times to her, are you nuts? But.
On the night of your birth, Studs Terkel took your father out for a celebratory drink, and Studs Terkel was a fixture in your house growing up.
A lot of people,
including, hang on, including Marcel Marceau, Roger Ebert, would fill. You made this quote in 2013 to the Chicago Reader. This is your life. I've done my intense research here. Everything swirled around that crazy second floor apartment in Old Town. To walk into this living room filled with smoke and clinking glasses and music and Studs Terkel, Marcel Marceau, Roger Ebert, to name a few, I cut it down. You don't wind up in life being starstruck about the kind of childhood, and it served me well. How has it served you well?
Well, because I never got the sense that any of these people, because I was very young, were anything but human beings. I didn't know, oh my God, Stud Circle's a radio star. Oh my God, Stud Circle's written books. Marcel Marceau was a completely different case because he was the world's most famous mime, so yep. He never talked. I thought, wow, this guy's interesting. He's making, pretend he's inside of a box.
And even in your second floor apartment?
Yeah, oh, that part, those parties were just nuts. Parties were just nuts. I remember Mort Saul, the famous comedian who just died, by the way, told us he was from Mars. And my brother and I said, wow, that's great. We got a visitor from Mars here. So there was nothing. It certainly was not a starstruck childhood. That's okay. For sure. And I realized, I mean, all these jokers did was spend, you know, from 7 o'clock at night to 4 o'clock in the morning sitting, drinking, and talking.
Right.
And I got used to the sort of art of conversation. They were all nice, normal people for the most part.
Legends.
For the most part.
Chicago legends.
They were. Royko was in there.
I mean, you're talking heavyweight Chicago history.
Yeah.
Top of the line all stars in your living room that you grew up in.
Indeed.
Okay, we're going to talk. We got to throw it to Schwani because he's chomping at the bit. But I want to talk about you graduated coming out of the break, Latin school, class of 69, and you were a cab driver. And I want to talk about how being that cab driver, driving people around Chicago, was instrumental in your upbringing.
You'll be surprised how uninstrumental it was. So please stay tuned.
That's a tease from a radio legend, Rick Kogan. All right, Rick Kogan. I drop out of college
because I went to Circle, and in the first class, we're in some auditorium. My graduating class at Latin was 38 people. My first class at Circle was like 400 people, and we're assigned to read the Red Badge of Courage. And I'm thinking to myself, wait a minute, I read that as a freshman at Latin and wrote a long paper about it. Maybe I'll find something else to do. And my father, God love him, a 3-year Phi Beta Kappa from the University of Chicago, living in Rogers Park and working midnight to 8 at City Newsboro, could have guilt-tripped me back to college in a second. He goes, what do you want to do? And I never thought I'd have this opening, so I grabbed the first thing I could think of, and I said, Dad, I want to drive a cab, thinking, wow, I will learn about people. Yeah. I will get amazing stories. I drove for about 2 years, mostly on and off, and 99% of every passenger I had to whom I asked, hi, why are you going to the Board of Trade building? Shut up and drive. What? Hi, ma'am. Why are you going to Marshall Field Company? This young man, please be quiet and just drive. So I'm thinking, okay, this is not going to get me any information. The key, one of the keys, is I wrote my first book after being at the Sun-Times for a while called Dr. Nightlife Chicago, which is kind of a collection of tavern saloon stories. And my father's best friend, and only because he was my father's best friend did he have me on the radio. I was on Studs' show, and Studs' show was like no commercials, solid hour. And it was like, Rick, here on page 47, you write about Ricardo's. Here, page 48, you write about the Earl of Old Town. Let's hear a song from Fred Holstein. Rick, here you write about something else. Let's hear a song from so-and-so. I get off, and my knees are weak. I thought, this is Studs' show. What do you think? Do you like it? I go, Studs, that's the most amazing hour of radio I've ever had. What is the secret? Rick, there's no secret. Read the book. Read the book. And just as you are prepared for this, do some research. And it's not just like, hi, Rick, what are you doing? What did you do for Thanksgiving? You have to be curious. Uh-huh. And Studs is great. He wrote his own epitaph, and I've followed that. To the letter, it was, curiosity did not kill this cat. If you're curious and you do some research, you can have a conversation. That's what I believe radio is all about, is conversations between, if I find something interesting, I got to believe that some people out there, these few faceless people listening to the radio in your car, in your bed, or in your toilet, will find it interesting, too.
You started your first byline at the Chicago Sun-Times at the age of 16.
How to get a teenage boy and what to do with him when you get him. I will never forget it because it had a picture of me. You know how column pictures are maybe an inch tall? This had a picture of me across half a page.
No way.
My high school graduation pic.
No way.
Yes, absolutely. And I ripped the book. It's probably the most critical review I've ever written in my career, saying this woman, I think I said, this woman is an idiot. She doesn't know anything about teenage boys. I am a teenage boy.
Oh, my God.
And she's nuts. I almost can remember her name, but I do remember the name of the book.
Join the trip after a couple of stops at the Sun-Times
and the Daily News.
Daily News before it went out of business in 78.
Yep.
And then you went back to the Sun-Times when that went out. Specialized in Chicago nightlife. Is that where you grew up in that environment?
Well, for all you young journalists out there, imagine yourself at 27 years old and the editor of the paper comes to you. You're doing general, you're interviewing Charo or something. And he comes to you and goes, how would you like to write about nightclubs and saloons? And I thought,
lottery.
Oh, my God, did I die?
Yeah, right.
Did I die? This is a dream come true. And I did that for a number of years.
And back then, nightlife was different than what nightlife is today. You're getting dressed up. It's martinis.
Some places.
There were
no craft cocktails, I'll tell you that much. But it was everything from, everything from the pump room to the billy goat. I mean, it covered a huge range. And you didn't just go to... I was lucky in that most people go to their neighborhood tavern. And then maybe, on their wedding anniversary, they'd go to some really nice place. But it was a wildly lively scene, David.
Unbelievably wild.
And a dream job.
As a 27-year-old?
And they said, I said, well, how do I pay? They go, oh, it's on an expense account. And I went, oh, my God, this is unbelievable. I'd be dead if I had kept it up for more than the 3 or 4 years.
So that was late 70s, early 80s.
Yeah, and that was what was collected in that book I went on Studs' show to talk about.
So Faces, Faces around? Rush Street was...
Rush Street was kind of on a downslope. There were still a few strip clubs there, like the Cabaret and the Spot, but it was getting pretty cleaned up, and it took... Arnie Morton came in and opened Arnie's and then Zorin's. He brought it back to life. And it's the Rush Street of the day is unimaginable now. Unimaginable.
You forget about it. It's all shops now. It's not what it was back in the day.
It's all high-end shops. You still got Gibson's and Dublin's and Carmine's.
Hugo's
Tavern on Rush is closed.
Right.
They're remaking it fast, I got to tell you.
What are they turning it into?
Another restaurant. Here's a classic problem for the new owners, a guy named Fred Barbera and one of his partners. They own the building.
Right.
Phil Stefani is in there, who knows how to run a restaurant. He ran Ricardo's in the latter years. And so he thinks, after 25 years, that he knows more about running a restaurant bar than Phil Stefani. He wouldn't renew his lease. And I say to him, oh, good luck, Mr. Barbera. Good luck. It's one of the hardest businesses in the world.
That's like telling Babe Ruth, I know how to hit home runs. I don't need your advice.
Yeah, I can pitch, too. Let me pitch and hit home runs. It's crazy.
We got 30 seconds before we're done. Unfortunately, done. I could spend an hour.
Just nice to see you.
Great seeing you. 4 years as syndicated editor of the Ann Landers Advice Column, written by Epi
Letterer.
What was that all about?
Well, I had known her since I was a kid, because when there was a great playoff to find a new Ann Landers, a nurse named Ruth Crowley had died, and there was a playoff, and five women got in the playoff. One of them was my mother.
Wow.
Who said, well, they didn't pick me because I'm too interesting, okay? So I'd known Epi since you're getting a sense of Mary Lou Cogan.
Yes,
here.
I got a false sense.
Yeah.
She could have hung out with Myrna Hochberg.
So, I'd known Epi, and I was an editor at the paper at the time, and she calls me and goes, now, Rick, I'd like you to edit my column. The most syndicated columnist in the history of newspapers,
huge,
right?
Huge.
And I say, well, Epi, I would love to, but I don't read you with any regularity. And this is the kind of person she was. She goes, well, that's okay. Now you'll have to. She was something. On any list in those days, in her day, when you had a list of the 10 most admired women in the world, it would be like Queen Elizabeth, Mother Teresa, Ann Landers. Yeah. Crazy. She was a wonderful woman.
I appreciate you taking this time out of your day.
What do you think I'd be doing?
I don't know. Probably drinking coffee and smoking a cigarette, writing a column someplace in a coffee shop.
Yeah, I don't smoke anymore.
Oh, you don't?
No.
Oh, thank God.
Yeah, tell
good
me
good for
it.
You.
Well, you know, you get COVID and then all these other things. It made it relatively easy. And plus, I don't get to stand in front of the Tribune Tower anymore.
It's not the same standing out.
And I can't afford to live there either.
I understand.
I can't afford to live there.
Well, you could. You just need about 2.3 for a one bedroom.
Yeah.
You'll be fine. Well, it's been a pleasure and
you
an
too.
Honor.
Happy holidays.
Happy, and you're a good friend. And
yeah, you are too.
What my friend Joe Hogle taught me was to tell those that you love them. And men don't tell other men that they love them, but you're a treasure. I love you, and I love that you came on, and I appreciate you taking the time and sharing your brief in the brief time that we had. You know,
that's the nature of a morning show on this station.
Yeah, commercials, live reads, and people yelling in your ear.
I actually just came in to see Bob Ferguson.
Did you?
Well,
don't forget about Schwani and Andy because they want to see you as well. All right, thank you for coming. Love you, buddy.
David,
we're going to take a quick break.